Previously on Worlds Away.
I think Arno looks up from his plans and he pulls out his slate and sends a message to Dr. Belova, and it just says, lunch, question mark.
I think she'll send back, I'd like to do a little target practice first.
How do we think this goes, the first shot?
Poorly. There's something I'd be appreciated about this practice. It's easy to know when you fail, easy to know when you succeed, and you can iterate endlessly until you execute flawlessly. Not a lot of variables to fuck up.
There's always uncertainty going into this kind of mission. And sometimes you just have to make a decision with the facts that you have.
Things are actually going incredibly well, Madam President. At this point, there are only two major holdouts.
Well, we always knew that Aventine was going to be uncooperative. Who's the other holdout?
You, ma'am. This is an opportunity to build something that lasts, not just a tenuous piece.
If I agree, do I have your word that you'll continue to do what you need to convince them?
You do, ma'am. Along those same lines, there's something else. During the strike on Aventine, ordered by Nico Torres, my home was destroyed as reported, and I pulled my son and my husband out of the rubble. But my husband, Mateo, was not dead. It has recently come to my attention that this information has made its way into the hands of Aiden Kyros.
When I agreed to Mar's plan, I warned him that something like this could happen.
Ma'am, my purpose in your administration was as a symbol of peace. I think the way I can best serve the Republic is by following Nico Torres's advice and going away quietly.
I think the source of her frustration is that things don't add up about Aventine, or probably more specifically about Aiden Kyros. But I think there's just something gnawing at her. So I'm going to roll. That's a 4.
I think the thing that is troubling you is the question of why would Aiden Kyros have allowed Mateo to back up your story. But I think the other consequence is I'm going to ask one question from the Abyss Stares Back. And that question is, for what does your character's darkest heart desire?
I think that deep down, if someone in it appeared and presented Mara with the choice of severing the Verge and Earth without a war, or keeping the interconnectivity of the galaxy, like of humanity, but lots of people are going to die, she would pick lots of people are going to die. And I think that's really selfish.
This is the wall where you can embark on your creative expression.
So I think if you're adding the constellations to the sky, Aiden Kyros reaches out and touches your hand and says, I thought you said that we would know when it was finished.
I said I would guide you. And then I think she finishes making the changes to the mural.
Episode. Wow.
God, what an episode.
Holy shit.
I'm still crying.
I mean, it was just wild. Like, when that thing happened,
I just didn't expect the VeggieTales crossover.
That was interesting.
Nobody's ever expecting Bob and Larry.
I leave for 30 seconds and we have a VeggieTales crossover.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, it
fuck
happened yeah, in the episode we're about to record.
Oh, fuck yeah. Fuck yeah.
Leela and the cucumber went to track down the shepherds.
Oh, shit.
Okay, Leela and Larry, there's an alliteration there. You just can't, like...
I don't know any of their names.
Yeah, okay, Lauren, you are assuming a lot of knowledge that we do not have.
Leela and the VeggieTales cucumber went to track down the shepherds is like a statement that could just stand on its own, like divorced of any context and be an accurate VeggieTales analysis.
Gotta be VeggieTales. Cauliflower.
All right.
Sweet and sour. Half an hour. Why are you?
I don't know
letting
what's happening.
Me still go
I'm
so, now.
I'm terrified. Okay. Are we ready to rock? And we'll roll. Welcome to Worlds Away, an actual play storytelling podcast. I'm your game master, John Ossip, and here with me, we've got Haley Daria.
Hello.
Lauren Wilbanks.
It's got to be VeggieTales.
It's got to be. Michael Morales.
The American Mall is dead.
And Moshtar.
We are risen.
We are risen.
Damn.
Indeed.
Okay. I'm just so committed.
I was expecting a 420 blaze it.
Yeah. I was going to surprise y'all and do a 420. But then I forgot, and I'm just, I just go first, and I'm just, like, always saying hello, and I just went into autopilot and said hello, and then the words left my mouth, and I was like, oh, I think I wanted to say happy 420.
That's the power of VeggieTales, is that it just eradicates all the sin out of you to make room for the cucumber, and maybe the tomato.
Okay, kinky, okay.
All right, we're going to move on right off that.
Let's please. Yeah, let's do.
So, when we last left off, Mara, you had just activated the Valiant's stealth system as the ship approached Aventine's second moon, which is where you understand their forces are producing the Lustra-destroying devices. I think when we jump back in, we see you sitting at the controls to the ship, and out the windscreen, we see this ash gray moon sort of pitted on one side with craters growing larger and larger in your view. What do we see on your face right now?
I think it's calm. She's definitely deeply analyzing. Is the moon, just to kind of envision it for myself,
mm-hmm.
Is it big enough to have an atmosphere, or is it akin to like the Earth moon as we know it, rocky, barren, no life, or is it she got a little spark there or something?
I had this later, but since you asked now,
oh,
I'll give
so
this
sorry.
To you now. No, you're good. I have a taste, and we can describe more things later, but I think that you are getting close enough now where you start to feel buffeting in the ship, and yeah. I think that that's from what you can tell to be a very, very thin atmosphere, so you okay, all definitely right. still need your vac suits, and I think that the degree of life that this place could support is pretty limited, but there is some very thin atmosphere on the planet. So at least you see that and can kind of feel it starting to, you know, it's not like you're getting this fiery reentry. You're just feeling a hint of
resistance.
Vibration in the Valiant as you begin to enter the moon's atmosphere.
Okay. Are they good vibrations?
Boo.
Of course. Where do we see Arno during all this?
I think he's in his room reviewing the plans one last time.
Okay. And what does he look like as he's doing that? Or what do we see as you're reviewing the plans?
You see him hunched over the desk in his room. He's standing and just swiping through the slate, looking through the plans. And I think every couple of swipes, he looks over at his notifications to see if anything has come in from Marcel. Because as he's looking at these plans, it's still at the point where I think he thinks this is a coin toss. Where we get in, we get out, we're successful, but we're still taking a risk, and maybe just a little bit more information about like the facility itself or just like how to navigate it more quickly would be a challenge. So it could be a situation where like he's confident that we'll get in. Maybe we'll even plant all these devices successfully, or maybe something happens inside where we get stopped or slowed down. And so we couldn't plant all of them, and it's only like a partial success could be the problem. Or maybe we're just too slow to get out and we get captured. But there's just a couple of opportunities for this to go somewhat wrong.
And just for everybody's recollection, so Marcel is referring to the baker on Sadis, who is sort of caught up in the Aventine spy ring that was uncovered on that planet.
Our cannulae plug.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that you, I mean, Arno, this, I don't think that this reassures you in any way. You've not received any communication or correspondence in response to the message that you sent, right? So in terms of what was done or what kind of heads up you're going to get, you have nothing on your slate. I don't think that you expect to receive anything at this point because you're already sort of at your destination here. Turning back to the plans, though, last episode we mentioned a Lustra mine, one that Arno was tasked with guarding back during the war, back when it was the fleet that controlled this moon. And we had mentioned that as a place that could give you cover as you approach the facility where Aventine is developing these devices. And so I see one of two approaches that you could take, and I'm wondering which one the two of you think is best. You could land the ship further away from the mine and then travel by foot or using the Grizzly even to get the rest of the way there. Or you could try to land the Valiant as close to the mine as possible, which would give you the shortest distance to cover and therefore also the fastest escape, but also risks the ship if something goes wrong.
Can I ask, so I had been previously assigned to this moon. How familiar am I with the terrain for that longer escape route? In other words, if we were getting chased out, do I think I have a way to like lose somebody in the Grizz?
Yeah. I guess the question is, if you want to know that now, I would have you roll share expertise. If you want to find that out later, you could hold off and roll later. But if you want to know now and that's going to affect your plan, then I'd say it's time for some dice. So go ahead and roll plus calculating.
That's a natural 12. Let's fucking go.
Oh my God.
Damn, bro.
Feeling spicy today.
Good start.
All right. So share expertise. When you consult your accumulated knowledge on something that you're an expert in, you roll plus calculating. And on a 10 plus, you can ask a question related to the topic. And the Space Master will give you a useful answer or ask you to make up the answer. And so I think your question was, what is the escape route look like if you were going to find a further away landing site where you could navigate either on foot or using the Grizzly, right? And so I guess that what I would say to you is you are very familiar with this area of the moon. I think that, again, this mine was one of the places you were tasked with protecting, and maybe that mine or a facility nearby, maybe that's actually where you abandoned, right? Where you left when you went on this sort of ill-fated rescue mission that led to you ultimately becoming a member of FSOC. Mm-hmm. And I think that the area surrounding it and the geography, that's something that you had to navigate as you built up your defenses and prepared for the rebels on Aventine to potentially make their way from the surface of the planet to this moon. And so my question now for you, Arno, is what are the kind of unique geographic features of this area that would give you some cover during a escape or some kind of chase that would make it difficult for you to be followed? Like, what's something that you would have the upper hand because you know this place to navigate through using the Grizzly?
Yeah, we had excavated a couple of spots over here to see if there were any useful resources on the moon. So obviously, you know, the proximity to Aventine is great, but if there was something that we could find on the surface or just underneath it, that might have given us an advantage during the war. And so we started digging a couple of tunnels and realized that strategically a couple of false flag tunnels would have been fantastic. So the surface of some of the bigger hills is just riddled with a bunch of holes. Some are incomplete, some go all the way through, some just have dead ends, and some are just set up to get someone lost for a little bit of time. And I think Arno has like a couple of routes that he would remember to get in and out.
All right. So there's these kind of tunnels through the rock or through the surface of the moon there that you could use to navigate and maybe big enough to drive through even if you took the Grizz.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in that case, I want to ask, maybe this is more Lauren's area of expertise, for you to describe the landing and maybe what the particular area where you land looks like. And, you know, I've kind of described the appearance, at least from a distance, as pretty similar to our moon. And that's both in terms of the color of the dust on the surface and the sort of presence of some craters, especially concentrated on one side of this moon. But otherwise, I'm curious as to what we think this particular area looks like and if there's any unique features as you pick a landing spot on the far side of these tunnels for the Valiant to land.
I think the biggest thing here is that Mara needs to go against the natural inclination to almost hide the Valiant. Because our stealth system is so good, we actually theoretically like don't need to do that. And it would be more logical to find the perfect place to take off of, right? I think that's what she's trying to locate, is that if she lands this, what's the easiest place to straight shoot out of there? Assuming, kind of making the assumption that we're going to need to get out in a hurry. So I think it's kind of maybe the clearest, least rocky stretch that will be a good touch off point.
So maybe it's like, you know, I described there being these craters. Maybe it's kind of the opposite of that. And maybe in one area, there's a very shallow plateau, right? So there's a kind of flat, slightly elevated area where you could set the Valiant down, and a very kind of narrow slope down that leads into a rockier, more obstructed area where the opening to these tunnels is. So I think we see the Valiant settle down. Maybe we don't see it, right? Because of this stealth device. Maybe we see the shimmer, and maybe we just see some indents appear into the loose dust and rock at the top of this plateau. On the bridge, I think everyone kind of gives out an exhale. And Arno, maybe this is when you finish looking through the plans and make your way back there. I think as the sounds of the engine are winding down, I'd mentioned that Charlie Zamora was on the bridge as well. And I think they turn to you two and say, based on what we found on the return trip from Feronia, I'm worried that these counter weapons might also affect our CM drive. Just make sure that you leave enough time for us to get out before these things go off.
I, at that, look Charlie straight in the face and say, if we can, we will. I would take this time to prepare to leave in under less than ideal circumstances.
I think Mara nods.
I think we see them swallow and then they nod silently. I think at that point, Captain Alba also says, if you need us to come get you, we'll be prepared to do that. But even with the stealth system, I'm guessing that would attract some attention. So if it comes to that, just make sure you're ready to go in a hurry as well.
Understood.
Before you leave the ship, do you say anything to each other or to the rest of this skeleton crew on the Valiant?
I think I look over at Dr. Belova and I ask, gut check me. How long do you think this will take?
I think you see her kind of stare up, and maybe if you're looking, her hands are kind of like ticking off on her fingers. We should try to move as slow as possible first. Not draw attention to ourselves. Be methodical. A few hours. But I'm assuming at some point we will need to pick up the pace.
I think to that Arno nods and just says, we should tell them to leave if we're not back by then. No news isn't necessarily good news on a mission like this.
Sure. But if we don't return, I don't think they have the greatest chances of making it off this moon either.
No, they wouldn't. But it would be a complete disaster if we failed and Aventine managed to get a hold of the stealth technology.
I think she looks down and maybe like walks over to Arno and puts a hand on her shoulder and says, it's time to go. No more contingencies.
I think Arno's a little embarrassed that after talking about how decisive we needed to be in moving along and working through imperfect plans, that he's getting caught up like that, and Dr. Belova's the one calling him out gently on it, and he just nods.
So I think the next shot is we see the vehicle left, and again, this is silent just because of the almost non-existent atmosphere on this moon, but we just see the vehicle lift descending down to the surface with the grizzly on it. And then I think we see a series of shots of this vehicle driving down away from the Valiant through these narrow winding tunnels, only lit by the lights on the grizzly itself, and then kicking up a small trail of dust as it rolls on uneven ground between several shallow craters. I think after all these kind of wide shots of the grizzly moving across the moon's surface, we see a closer angle of the grizzly beginning to slow down and then eventually stopping. And then I think we see the two of you step out as you look ahead toward the edge of a crest that lies above another of these shallow depressions or craters. And as you step out of the grizzly, what I want to know is, what do we see in terms of what your suits and your gear look like in this moment? And also, how are you moving up toward this crest, this ledge above the crater, which Arno, you know, is the location of the mine?
So Arno's decked out in his tactical vac suit.
Yeah, he's got the tac vac.
Yeah, just for the audience, remember, it's sick as shit. He's looking like a Power Ranger in space. It's dope.
Carbon fibery, green. I thought green was... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, unnecessary shoulder length over here. We just added that. We've retconned it.
And I guess for you, Arno, I'm not going to hold you to the gear slots, but I mean, are you like visibly armed in this circumstance? What kind of equipment does Arno, you know, what do we see that looks like, or kind of how tactical are we, I guess, is the question. Like, how much of a threat would somebody perceive you as?
Arno's packing light on this. The drone is making a reappearance. Okay. The suit is coming out. It's looking mighty suity. And I think that he wouldn't have brought a gun, but he might have brought grenades.
I won't hold you to the gun, the disclaimer of the gun. I think if it comes to that, you could have something, but...
He doesn't have a shotgun slung on his back, but you can see, like, along the belt over here, you've got a couple of grenades, and then, like, maybe a pistol on the sidearm type situation, but he's trying to pack light for this.
Gotcha. What about Mara?
So Mara didn't take an upgraded fancy space suit, so she's still in the kind of tier one vac suit, and... is not a Power Ranger, I suppose, to wrap up that.
Damn.
Your dagger isn't also a flute?
Well, that's basic. That's not like a special thing in the future. Everyone has a flute dagger. Come on.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah, that's kind of built into the rules. I guess my question on that, though, is, you know, maybe your suit's not very tactical. But again, I think the thing I'm trying to get at of this is, if somebody saw you walking here, would they, like, perceive you as a threat? Like, how kind of armed are you taking this situation?
Oh, I don't think you can see any visible weapons from far away on Mara. But I think she does have her pistol on her. But yeah, it's not like she doesn't have like the sniper rifle or, you know, like the shotgun or anything. I think we're like last resort, close combat weaponry is the feel of this mission, and not, you know, the other weapons that I named.
Got it. So... in terms of gear, what I want you both to, you know, Arno, you already have your sort of special tactical vac suit. And Mara, I want you to add to your gear list a regular vac suit for the sake of this mission. You know, we had said that the Valiant has those on there, and these are your kind of the ordinary ones you've seen in past arcs. I want you to go ahead and add that. And then both of you check off, mark off that you have it. So that's one of your gear slots, however many you have. And then mark off one use of the three on the vac suit. So each of you should have two uses left. And we'll see if various complications or other adventures into this kind of lower, non-breathable atmosphere of the moon require further uses of the vac suit. And so I think my second question was, how are you moving up toward the edge of this crest? And kind of how do we see you two acting as you approach the mine?
I think we're crawling on our bellies. Like, we're just... it's like an army crawl type situation.
Not for like thousands... like. Tens of
no, just for the end, is like just to see over the top over here.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So you kind of like crouch down at the edge and then look over. Is that the idea? Yeah. So that way you're never really that visible. Okay. Mm. So I think we see you two do that. And then once you sort of inch forward to the top of the crest, you can see down into the mine. From what you know, Arno, before the war, this mine was one of the main sources of contramatter on this moon. And then over the course of several decades, the Republic discovered better and better ways to find and to extract as much of the Lustra as it could from it. After Aventine gained its independence, it continued here where the Republic left off. But based on what you're seeing now, this mine has been silent for several years. I'll have a few things to add to this later, but before that, I want to turn it over to you and ask, what do we think this abandoned mine looks like, both in terms of the structures that we see and if there's anything unique about the landscape in this crater?
Yeah, so I think because of the realities of really like this like era of space pioneering and the war, there's like a refining facility just outside of the mine. So a lot of the goods that were heart collected in the mine were processed on site. And I think there's a couple, I think there's just like one bigger building with like an entry that goes in and out of the mine. So there's like a ramp almost, I would say, that like leads or feeds into the mine directly. And it's, I think it's just one massive facility. It is gated. And then I think, I don't know. What else, what do you think is on over there?
No, I think that sounded perfect. The only thing that I'd add is, so approximately how long ago was it decommissioned? Is it like in a state of disrepair, do we think? Or is it like kind of a key that they never left? Is that this building, although ostensibly like no longer used for the purpose it was erected, is still in fact a touch point of some sorts?
So I think the answer to that, though, is like this mine is not the facility itself, right? This is not where they're developing the devices.
Sure.
I think it's like this is kind of in between where the tunnels let out and where the facility is, and gives you some cover to sort of approach the edge maybe without being noticed, right? So this is kind of a place that you can transit through. And I think it's been, you know, we can characterize this a little bit. My sense is it probably is showing some disrepair because it's been several years since anyone was extracting anything from this area. So that's what you know, is it look, I mean, from the appearance, it looks like it hasn't been used in a couple of years. So I guess, you know, what does that look like is the question.
What does space disrepair look like? Because, you know, on Earth, you might just expect that you'd see weeds overgrown on like the facility or something to that effect, or just regular wear and tear fading from like the sun. I imagine in space, like this is, the building has been more or less bleached from the nearest star, or approximately to the nearest star. And then I imagine like maybe there's some space debris that like hits a couple of like the outward, some of the surfaces. So it just looks a little dingy over there. Is that fair?
Yeah. I feel like there's probably a lot of dust.
Yeah. Dust whipped.
Yeah. Cause I mean, so I like, if you think about it, I assume there's little atmosphere here. Did we say that?
Yes.
Yeah. It's like very
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like there's not really going to be like wind activity. There's not really going to be protection from the sun. So I agree. It's bleached and probably just like a layer of dust has built up on everything.
So I guess one thing, though, in addition to the structures, is do we have anything we wanted to add about how the landscape looks like in this crater? Like, do we see any sort of particular rock formations, or what is the environment look like, or maybe like what effect has the mining operation had on the environment?
Yeah, I'm imagining that as you look down, and maybe if you let your eyes scan towards the facility, it turns from a vista that is very natural seeming to very starkly man-made. So it goes from hills and valleys and craggly bits in the kind of what you'd imagine to be unkempt, much as a moon can be a wilderness, right? A moon, most moon-like essence, moves to flat, compact. I know it's not being actively maintained or whatever, but it still has to have that stark, like, humans have been here and we have molded it to fit our presence.
I wonder if there are signs of like previous use, like tread marks over a familiar trail from like vehicles coming up and down, and maybe if like there's signs of like debris, like man left debris, like maybe workers were like bored and just like tossing cans or like doing target practice like on the outside or something to that effect. Not a lot of it, but just like a couple of signs here and there. Boredom's undefeated, y'all.
Yeah, anytime you have people who are on the clock, they're gonna find ways to kill time.
Arno, I wonder if there was any kind of sign of the Republic built this, like, oh, you know, how they stick the president's name on everything here in the U.S., right? Or like whoever is responsible for building something. I wonder if there's like a sign that showed the Republic built the mine, or kind of that took credit for it from the Republic, that was defaced, right, in some way, or kind of, you know, made into a joke, and that remains.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, that tracks. I think there's, I wonder if that was used for target practice too. And you know what? I wonder if there's like an effigy of Nico Torres there that's also been defaced over time.
Yeah. So it would have been Nico Torres, right?
Yeah.
He's the president. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think maybe you're observing it. I'll sort of give you this without any dice roll. There's no sign of any sort of human activity here. And it looks like there hasn't been any human activity here for, again, at least months or years. And so I think taking that in, you're able to move over this crest and approach the front of this mine, sort of descending down this shallow crater. I don't think this necessarily presents a challenge in any way, but you know, you had mentioned there was a fence around this facility. How do you get through the fence? Do you like cut into it? Do you climb it? Do you knock it over? Just kind of like, how do you interact with this, seeing this obstacle that you described?
Yeah, the fence isn't really meant to keep anything out. It's more that bored idiots might want to take like a cart on a joyride type situation, and you want to get in their way as much as possible and recover that. And so I don't think there's a whole lot to this fence. In fact, I'm sure that it's not even really like secure. It's just a physical obstruction. And so I think with the slightly lower gravity, we can very easily like climb over it. Maybe it's 8 to 12 feet tall. I don't think there's like wires above it. I think it's just meant to get in the way.
And do you think this is a kind of like wire fence? Like, what's the material? What does it look like?
Have you seen, they're called like waterproof fences that are deployed for in areas that are prone to flooding for hurricanes. They set these up around like hospitals or something like that. So it looks like just a solid sheet almost of material that's put up rather than chain link fence, but they come up and they come down really easily and they just stack really neatly. I think it's like that kind of material where it's like solid panels that are vertical.
Okay. So I think maybe you're climbing them, and I think maybe, and Arno, are you going first or is Mara going first?
I think Arno's going to go first just to make sure that it's safe on the other side.
So I think maybe you go and you start to climb up this fence. And I think it feels unstable. And actually, as you get to the top, it, you know, you mentioned these kind of stackable pieces. I think one of the hinges of the top actually gives way. I don't think you're injured in any way. I think you're able to catch yourself. But I think that just the amount of disrepair that this fence is in, it means that it just, even trying to support your weight, it kind of broke through and leaves a kind of gap there as you move in. So just kind of using that to characterize how disrepaired the edge of this facility is, or that there's any attention to that.
I think Arno's face gets hot with embarrassment. And before Dr. Bolova can say anything, he offers, "Great start. At least we won't have to worry about the fence on the way out."
Truly a trailblazer, as she kind of pushes her way through whatever hole or disrepair has been generated.
I think it's kind of like only 2/3 of the height it was before. So you're able to just, maybe with a little leverage, kind of vault over, push yourself over at this point. Mm-hmm. So no, it's not full height. So as you're moving through this mine now and around these structures that we described, are you saying anything to each other? Or if not, what else are you doing?
I think that Mara is kind of passively, or maybe actively using the scanner, actually. What I want to do is be prepared, as you can imagine. And I kind of want to use the scanner to preemptively sense if anyone is coming in our direction.
Okay.
Kind of gives us a heads up if I am successful.
Can we tag team?
Describe what you desire.
I think if you're using the scanners to check for people, I'd like to use the drone to check for cameras.
Hmm. Okay.
Or we can flip it and reverse it where you use the scanners to check for cameras and I use the drone to look for people.
I mean, hey.
No, I think that works. Arna, maybe you go ahead first and roll plus calculating for the remote drone move.
Hmm.
And I think that then I'll just say that, you know, we can use the drone either to do any of the things, you know, you get the hold based on that move, but also you can use the drone to help with
Yikes, Mara's experience. Move.
Mm. Oh, did you fail? Okay.
That's a fail.
How about we not have him interact with what I want to do in any way?
No, no. Okay. I know what happens with the drone then. Mara, you go ahead and roll, scope it out then. Just and you can do it with, despite the fail, you can do it with advantage for use of the scanner. I think mm-hmm. that's one of the attributes of it. You know, do mark off one use of the scanner, but then go yep. ahead and roll scope it out.
No way I can fail, right? A 10 and a 13. So yeah, she scans. Okay.
That's full success. So I'm going to let you ask your questions in a second. But Mara, I think you're looking at the scanner and maybe you're kind of holding it up and have it outstretched to scan the mine. Arno, I think you go and attempt to launch the drone. But I'd mentioned that the atmosphere on this moon is extremely thin. And I think that it is too thin for whatever kind of propellers or lift system powers this drone to generate enough lift for it to fly. So I think it kind of sputters out of your hand and crashes is too strong a word. I don't think it's like damaged in any way that it kind of falls down on the dusty ground. Maybe you have to reset one of the rotor blades, but you realize this is not going to be effective to launch the drone. And in fact, that you're not going to be able to use this in any way in the outside air of this moon. So I think in the outside atmosphere, it just the drone cannot operate in that environment. And so I think right now it's discharged. I think you could get the drone back after this scene, but I don't think it's going to work outside, right? So I think that that's the limitation, and maybe that's the consequence of the fail here. Mara, you succeed. On the other hand, you're using your scanner. For scope it out on a 10 or higher, your investigation pays off and you ask 3 questions from the list. Yeah, I think some of this is going to help, you know, maybe set you up. I think others are for more of the flavor right here. But go ahead and ask the 3 questions and I'll answer them to the best of my ability.
Yeah. So I think number one, what I intended to do, that question will be, what's my enemy's true position? So I want to have a little bit of precognition as to when enemies kind of walk within our radar. I also think, where is my best escape route way in, way past? That also kind of speaks for itself. I want to be able to get in and get out effectively. And then I'll open it up to you, Mike. I think this question, the last question I see is like 2 branching things. Mm. It could be one or the other. So one could be, how could I best end this quickly? Right. And so that kind of demonstrates our intent to execute our job as flawlessly as possible and leave without a trace. And then the other question I can imagine us asking is, who or what here could be a useful opportunity? And that is more of, we're utilizing this as both, yes, this LDD destroying mission, but also any sort of fact finding we can do. So happy to hear your input here.
Yeah, I wonder if like how to best end this quickly is like this phase of the mission where it's just like, how do we get into position as quickly as possible? Okay. Too, but who or what could be useful is always a fun question to ask. I feel like you can never go wrong with that one. I think if there's something more correct, you go with it, but that's like our blanket.
And I guess the only thing I'll say with, best end this quickly is like, I like the way that you put it, Mike, but I wonder if that's mm-hmm. kind of pretty close to escape route way in or way past. Right. Yeah. I mean, not that I'm happy to give you kind of whatever solutions you're pushing for on that. But I think that, you know, you might get some more, again, I mean, maybe it's not directly about this stage of the mission, just because, you know, right now you're not faced with a threat, right? You're not in the facility yet, but maybe it's like, oh, there's some additional information either about the mission or maybe about some other things that you could uncover. So I think, not to push it too hard in one direction, but just wanted to note that.
Yeah, I think useful opportunity. So in total, enemy's true position, best escape route way and way past, and useful opportunity will be our 3.
Mm. Okay. So I think there's going to be some overlap in some of this. I'm going to give you a little bit later, right? Like right now you're, and I'll say like when you're using this, if you're imagining the crater where the mine is, right? And I'll describe this a little bit more. I think on the other side of this, like I'd mentioned, there was a kind of shallow depression that you walked down to get into the crater. I think there's a steeper edge on the other side. And at the top of that, that is where you understand, you know, maybe it's some distance from where the mine is from this crater, but up at the top of that, that's when you are no longer obscured. And that is where the facility is. That's where the structures are. And again, you have the plans for that, and I'll describe that more in a little bit. But that's what you know from the plans that you were provided from Scion. That's where this facility is and where they are developing these devices. So I think you're scanning. I think that you are detecting significant movement, including movement of some vehicles on the other side of that ledge, right? So up that kind of wall of the crater, you're detecting both movement of people and again, some vehicles. And I'll get more to what that looks like when we sort of get up there and take a look. You do not detect, however, any signs of life, I'll say whatsoever, including any people in this crater. In terms of your escape route, way in or way past, I think maybe one of the things that you're doing is getting a kind of like topological reading. So it's like almost superimposed over your sight picture, over what you're seeing in this crater, information about the grade and the kind of paths that you might be able to take to navigate effectively up this difficult terrain on the other side, up this steeper wall. And I think that you see that there is a regular cut into that edge of the crater. So sort of a part where maybe the rest of it's relatively smooth and circular, but there's a kind of indent, maybe part of the rock or the terrain that cracked from whatever impact caused this millions of years ago. And you see that depression gives a kind of shallower path up. And from the schematics that you received from Scion, you know that there is a short structure on the other side of that that would give you visual cover for you to hide behind. And so I think that that route would allow you a chance to get relatively close to some of the buildings or other structures that are part of this facility. And you could use that to get in and out of this crater where the mine is, possibly undetected, at least if no one's immediately looking at or for you. In terms of useful opportunity, I'll give you kind of a couple pieces of this. One, I think, is what I just described. You know, I think that that might also be useful in addition to being a escape route way in or way past. But I think another thing that might be useful are the structures of this mine itself. I think you are scanning and you realize that the equipment here, I mean, some of it is significantly in disrepair, right? I think, again, it's been clearly not used for several years. And I think your scanning, you know, one of the things that we had mentioned that you've used the scanner for is also detecting the signals both from Lustra and from these Lustra destroying devices. And I think you're scanning, and maybe I'll add a little bit more on this later, but I think you're detecting maybe only the faintest, if not almost non-existent signal of Lustra in this crater. So I think, you know, maybe that explains why the mine is no longer operating in the sense of that's been fully depleted. And I think maybe even that you can tell that it's not that this carries the unique signal of those devices, right? It's not that one of the devices was tested on here, and it's just that Earth and Aventine, first one and then the other, took everything from this place. And now that's why it is resting here, a sort of derelict, because everything useful from it's been taken. But I think in terms of the equipment, right, although it is damaged, I think some of it could still be made to function. And I think you're moving forward and see if I can add one thing to the landscape here. A dark metal, this is like such a specific reference of an appearance, but it looks like a bacteriophage, right? It's like this multi-legged object that has a tall central tower, and it's sort of perched or is resting above the surface of this moon. Almost it's like a claw on the surface. And I think what this is a kind of like mining derrick that could unleash a stream of like either plasma or laser cutting to rip into the surface of this moon, right? So it's something that could maybe, I don't think it could easily be moved. I think it's something that would, that was put into place by very heavy equipment that you don't have access to. But it's something that I think you believe, either with enough time or maybe just enough luck, you could turn back on. To what effect, I don't think that you're sure, but it would, you know, I think given the size of this thing, you think it would be relatively dramatic. And so I think that that might be a, you know, potentially useful opportunity. I'll put that in the future.
Mm. Ah, yes. Dr. Below's favorite weapons, abandoned machinery.
Aww.
She does have a track record with those. I do think, however, as you're walking toward this device, or maybe you're looking at it and you have the scanner out, something catches your vision. Maybe a few dozen feet in front of this, you can see as you approach a silhouette on the ground. It is a gray shape, maybe 4 or 5 feet long and between 1 and 2 feet wide. And your scanner is not detecting anything obvious about this shape. You know, at least you had said what you were looking for, and none of those things have caused your scanner to indicate or go off. How do you react to this? Do you try to get a better look at it, or are you keeping your distance?
It's just like an object on the ground. Does it appear to be, I'm guessing it's made of different material than anything that I've seen so far. Like, it's not made of the same material of the building or the machinery around me or the fence.
That's fair to say. I think it has some dust on it. We had mentioned that the dust had kind of gotten everywhere. And so I think that's the case. And I think the reason why it took you a long time to see it is the coloration is pretty close to the surface, but it's maybe 1 or 2 hues darker of a gray than the dust that's covering everything. And so maybe as some of the dust blows off of this, you can see that there's this darker gray object.
Hmm. I think if it's in my way, I'm not going to treat it like it's like a weapon or anything, but I'm not going to go out of my way to step on it. So I might give it like a few feet's worth of berth, but...
Hmm. Oh, okay. I mean, you're much further away from it right now than that. So I think that will give you, you know, you can definitely get that close to it without, you know, without stepping on it, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So I think if that's the case, if you're not actively avoiding it, right, but you're not trying to get right up on it, right, you can move a little bit closer to see it, and it is kind of in between you and this tower.
Yeah.
And I think what you see when you approach it, Mara, is it is a, I mean, I'd say like husk is the best way I describe it, but it is the carapace of a dead glow crawler.
Wow, how could I have guessed?
I'd say that this one's a little wider and flatter than the others you've seen. And I mentioned the kind of gray color to maybe blend in with the moon here.
I think after observing it and figuring out what it is, I don't think Mara makes an effort to go over there and like excavate it or examine it any further.
Mm.
I think that maybe it might be her intent to go inspect the plasma trail close up. But I think we've been here a little long, and I think we need to move on and start moving towards our ultimate objective.
So I think if that's the case, maybe you just take note of it and then walk past it, right? So you're kind of walking to the right and move toward the plasma torch or this and a plasma cutter. I think you see that there's a very old, I mean, I think it's still like an electronic kind of touch device, but whatever this is, it's very dated, right? This technology is showing its age at this point. I think it was designed to be hardier rather than slick. So very different from your experience on the Valiant or anything you would have worked with at Genesis Laboratories. I think at the base of this cutter, though, you actually notice that there are several more of those husks, these sort of the carapaces of these dead glow crawlers. And Arno, maybe we actually see you kind of walking past and you look to the left of the path that you were walking, and maybe there's some short buildings there. And I think that you see surrounding a hole that was cut into the rock, like somewhere that would have been an entrance into the mine, there are actually dozens, if not hundreds, of these dead glow crawlers there.
Hey there, it's Mike. Thank you so much for listening to Worlds Away. It's been an absolute blast making the show and inspiring so much future fan fiction. If you're enjoying Worlds Away so far, you can help us out by spreading the word to friends, family, and coworkers you corner at the water cooler. We're relying entirely on word of mouth to advertise, so this is the number one way to help support the show. And if you've already talked about us to everyone you know and want another way to support us, you can also rate and review us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other platform you use to listen to podcasts. You can also give us a shout out on social media on most platforms at Worlds Away Pod or at our website, worldsawaypod.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the episode.
Back on Ascension Station, where do we find Nasir?
I don't think we find Nasir on Ascension Station at all. I think that we just sort of cut in and there is like a klaxon blaring on a ship and you just hear it calling for like immediate evacuation and for like folks to put on their suits. And I am in what is essentially an airlock, like throwing a suit on. And there is no shuttle in the airlock, but there is a strange light, I guess, out of the airlock. You looked out of it. There's a ship out in space.
So I think this is tough because, you know, maybe for the first time since we started this campaign, you have much more of an idea of what's going on here than I do. So this is difficult for me in that
role
reversal.
Well, well, well. How the turntables have. Yes.
I guess my question for you, though, is you mentioned this light outside of the airlock. Is, I mean, like seeing it through the window is kind of how I'm imagining this. And is the light, like, what significance does the light have? Is that a source of rescue or safety, or is it something else?
I think that it's another ship, but I don't think it's one I recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I know anything about it. I just think it's another ship.
And so what are you trying to do in the airlock?
I think I am trying to evacuate this ship. I think you can hear folks running down the hall, and I think you can almost hear like burst fire as though there's like fighting happening on this ship.
Huh.
And like I said, most of the, I guess you'd call them like the lifeboats are gone. And so once I have my suit on, I think I just sort of grab hold of like a something, like strap myself down so I don't get yanked out into the vacuum, and I open the airlock.
Do you mean that you open it violently, like the air blows out, or do you mean that you sort of open it in the, like, just slowly opens the vacuum of space?
I think that I strap into like an emergency, like, jumper seat,
mm-hmm.
and I like smash a big red button on the side that like is like emergency airlock, and it blows the airlock off.
Okay.
And like the room is like violently like rattled. And I think that probably is like sealed from the rest of the ship for the time being until like eventually it settles, right? Because it's indistinguishable from the vacuum.
And not to go backwards, but you had mentioned there was kind of gunfire, I guess, on the ship. Do you know who's fighting?
I have no idea.
What do you do next?
As soon as there's still in the airlock, I will unstrap myself. And I think I'm still connected to the ship via tether. But I think I will really quickly on my arm set coordinates towards the ship, the other ship, and I'll jump.
Leaving the tether attached.
I think, yeah, leaving a way back. If okay. I get close to the ship and there's a problem.
So, was that real?
Not done yet.
Ascension exploded. Sorry. No,
Leela's dead.
No,
we didn't
peace
tell
negotiations.
You.
Yeah. Damn, Leela. Everybody else knew. You're just hearing this?
Did I miss the meeting?
You should have been on Thursday's call.
Yeah. That was awkward that you weren't there, even though I was in the same house as you.
Yeah, you were downstairs skipping the call like usual.
Classic.
Can I ask a just logistical question? I mean, it was just because the name, if I'm being honest, but like, is this like Into the Abyss, or do you want to roll anything?
Oh. I think that's so interesting. Yeah, I'll roll Into the Abyss.
I mean, it's just like you jump, right? Like, I don't know. This feels like you're going into the abyss, right?
I'm not going to lie to you. I have no idea how Into the Abyss works. And I don't know what my alien score is.
In my experience, you want to do something cool and interesting, and then you roll badly. So hope that helps you.
Yeah, that is the way it normally works.
That's a natural 12.
Okay.
Damn. Zero. What the fuck? That's the second one this episode, right?
Yeah, Mike rolled one.
That's good to get him out now before the end, where I need some.
Oh no!
No, that's not what we're. God, ruiner.
So, when you stare unblinking into the abyss, looking for forbidden or forgotten knowledge, you can roll plus alien, and on a 10+, you're shown dark visions that lend you insight. You can ask the abyss one question, and the abyss will answer. And I don't think there's any limitation on the question you can ask. I'll then ask you a question from the abyss stares back.
So, when I jump into the abyss towards the light, the tether goes way, way longer than makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Right? I go way further into the abyss and way closer to a ship than any ship would be carrying this kind of tether, right? It's like dozens of almost miles. And then it catches.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I hear something sort of staticky on my comm. And there's a voice I almost recognize telling me to come back. And so I think the question I ask the abyss in this moment, is there something better out there?
Yes. Next question.
I mean, that's the question I ask. And I left it intentionally vague. A gift for our GM.
Only if you build it.
Ooh.
How do we see that in the abyss?
I think there's a blue glow that fills the space. And I think space compresses. And I think suddenly we're somewhere new. And I'm looking up at new stars.
Is the tether still there?
Is that the abyss's question?
No, I have a follow-up question from the abyss.
The tether is still there for this moment.
Ring, ring, the abyss is calling.
In that case, for what does your character crave forgiveness, and from whom?
I think I crave forgiveness most for running away when I made a mistake. And I think the person I crave that forgiveness from the most is no longer with us.
Oof. Leela.
I cut the tether.
What happens?
I drift towards the other ship. And in a manner that doesn't really make sense in physics, I start to go faster and faster towards the ship, and it gets brighter and brighter and brighter, and I wake up in my apartment on Ascension Station.
Where do we find Leela?
Dead.
fighting the people who are on Nasir's ship because it's like, ran away and she
not
didn't.
Not today, motherfuckers!
Nasir craves forgiveness most because he ran away, and the person he craves forgiveness from is no longer with us because she died. All right.
All right.
Like, damn. There, we were trying to be serious for half a second, but no, we're good. Good job, King.
Okay. So I actually think we find Leela in the room where the plenary session is going to take place today. And I think it's already been kind of reset up to the way it was on the first day, including the fact that in the middle, there is this board where all the statements that everyone wrote, all the principles, are still visible, along with all of the initials that everyone wrote to signal support.
I think we'd kind of described it as like, maybe it's like holding up this large piece of the actual paper that,
yes,
I don't know if Reeve Kasarik provided or somebody else did. I think it was Reeve Kasarik that unrolled it.
Yes. I think we see Leela walk up to that board with the paper on it. And I think we see her fumble for a second looking for an actual pen to write with. But then I think she finds it and she writes a new statement next to all of the others.
At this point, do we see what she writes?
Humanity must safeguard all species of life on the planets we inhabit.
This is kind of added to the bottom below the other principles, which already have the initials or kind of indications of support next to them.
Yes, exactly. And then I think after she finishes writing, she kind of steps back, turns and looks to the rest of the room, and maybe just has a moment of quiet contemplation.
When does Nasir arrive?
I come in a little while after. Once Leela's, you know, probably, I don't know if she's was sat down or was leaned against something in her traditional lean style. But I think that, like, whatever she was doing, she's, like, in regular Leela mode now when I walk in the door.
I think we find Leela still standing up near the front. And maybe when Nasir comes in, she kind of snaps out of it and goes back to her seat.
I'm glad I caught you before everyone else arrived. I pitched the plan, at least in a preliminary sense, to Astrid and Annika Quayle. How did things go with Administrator Leclerc and Randall Lawrence?
The conversation with Lawrence was easy enough. He's fine with whatever we propose. Leclerc was a bit difficult. She refused to discuss anything with me until I pulled out the protein bar that Arno had left under as a backup plan. Once that smoothed things over, it was pretty straightforward as well.
Excellent. Then I think we're in a wonderful position to properly propose the plan.
Does Nasir notice the addition that Leela made to the sheet at this point, the list?
I think after I say propose the plan, I look up and see the principles on the board, on the sheet, excuse me. And when I notice Leela's proposal, I just smile. Would you prefer to introduce your principal individually or as part of our larger proposal?
I would rather propose it separately. I don't want it to be conflated with everything else.
Of course. Let's be prepared to rewrite history again.
So I think at this point, the door opens. And maybe it's like these kind of double doors. Maybe it's a very ceremonial room you're in. And I think you described it as kind of like tiered and circular, right? So it's very, and maybe the lighting is very soft on the appearance, is very soft. And I think the first person through the door is Reeve Kasarik. I think she smiles at the two of you as she enters, and she's wearing a light blue tunic, but one with buttons placed across the front in a seemingly random pattern, at least at first glance. So Nasir, this is a very low stakes role, but would you do share expertise for me.
10 plus whatever my share expertise stat is. What is share expertise? Is it like calculating?
Who cares? Calculating.
11.
Well, it could be a minus, in which case it would change the result. So, but it's not a minus. So the share expertise, when you consult your accumulated knowledge in something you're an expert in, on a 10 plus, I'll either give you a useful answer or ask you to make up the answer. So Nasir, I think that this pattern of the buttons on the front of the tunic, you can tell that it is symbolizing something, and it is a constellation. And so my question for you is, what is the constellation and what is its significance?
Is it Ursa Major and Minor again?
I don't think Reef Kasarik would ever use, and in fact, Ursa Major and Ursa Minor is Nasir's little raise of fate, like, fuck you to Reef Kasarik's. The stars are different here.
Okay.
Not all of them. I think actually it's the opposite. I think it is like an almost coyote-like animal is what the constellation is of. But I think the significance of it is twofold. One, it is like a frontier representation. They were common on the outskirts of civilization in Aventine. But more importantly, this was the first constellation chosen in the Verge where not a single star was visible from Earth. So I think more than anything, what this signifies is looking towards the future and towards what humanity beyond Terra is.
So I think we see Reef Kasarik step forward and then take her seat. And following her, the rest of the delegates begin shuffling into the room. But at this point, I think we cut away. Arno and Mara, after a few more minutes of moving through this mine, you reach the opposite edge of the crater, on the other side of which is the facility. I had mentioned this kind of cut into the rock that provides a shallow way up this steep edge to the crater, and one that gets you very close to a short structure on the other side, one that you could use to conceal your movements. Before I get to describing the rest of the structures in the facility, can you describe how you're approaching the edge here, both in terms of how you're sort of physically surveying the facility and also how you're keeping your cover?
I think Arno's proceeding forward, trying to press himself against as many surfaces as possible, like get looks around corners, that sort of thing. My priority is getting in unseen, getting out. It'd be great if that didn't happen, but we can proceed with like a little less caution and a little more urgency. In this case, like the whole thing goes up in smoke if we're caught before we have a chance to get in. And so I might even try to signal like Mara to just follow my lead the way that I'm trying to like get in, yeah. Like, or the way that I'm moving.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that Mara has let Arno take the reins and kind of lead on this one. And she is very happy to just follow his actions and orders.
So maybe you reach a short lip at the edge of the crater, and then after a few seconds, crawl up to the surface and, keeping very low and crouched, move behind this structure, which as you approach it, you see is a small awning under which are several storage containers. Seems like supplies that are being kept at the facility but aren't important enough to keep in the more central area of this complex. I think there's a sort of short railing around it that's opaque. It's not has a solid siding to it that lets you crouch behind it and get some cover. Are you using like binoculars or kind of any kind of optical scope to look? How are you observing what's going on inside the facility itself?
I think canonically we established that like the inside of my visor like has a lot of those functions built in. And so like on my end, it's just like there's this interface that's like zooming things in, and there's like a couple of, I want to say almost like, what's the word I'm thinking of over here? Not triggers. There's a couple filters? Of micro gestures that you could use to like activate certain features in there. So it's just like you might see Arno just kind of looking forward, but you might see his fingers like kind of like moving near his side. And it's just like he's doing gestures to try to control the zoom and like the visor and stuff like that.
Yeah, maybe it's a combination of that and also an eye tracker, so it's kind of following where you're looking inside the suit. So I just sent you a map of the facility.
Oh, we have a battle map.
But because this is a audio medium, I'm going to also describe it a little bit. So I think the two of you are crouched behind the rectangular structure that is in the kind of bottom left side of the map I sent. You'll see one that's kind of close to the edge of this ragged line. That's the crater. And there's a square structure. I think that's the awning that you're crouched behind. Sort of from your field of view, maybe you're like peeking out along the right edge of this bunker to sort of see into the facility and see as much as you can. You can see that sort of toward the left, right? So the furthest back to the left, there are a set of three landing pads, one very large one and two small ones. One of the small ones is occupied by a ship, but the other two are empty. Directly in front of that, you see several bunkers that appear to be half buried into the ground or into the terrain of the moon. And Arno, you recognize these as at least very similar. You can infer based on their shape to be munitions bunkers. They're kind of buried in case if something goes wrong, it contains the blast. And I'm not sure that that's really appropriate or necessary in this case for containing these devices. But, you know, this is what people know how to build, right? And I think that you know that this is almost a staging area where one would expect to hold potentially dangerous objects before they're loaded onto ships. And that's what you see sort of directly in front of you or closest to you. Next to that, there's a maybe like largely one story, but I think there's parts of it that rise up to a second floor building that you know is the kind of administrative offices or contains the sort of central command systems for this facility. And moving to the right of that, there's another structure that is the power reactor. On the far right side, there is a structure that contains laboratories, sort of research and development facilities. And near that's a larger complex that contains the dormitories and living accommodations for the people who are working here. And then in the center of the facility is a connected set of three large circular structures, along with a couple smaller rectangular buildings to the bottom or to the south of it. And that is what you know to be the central production facility where these things are being made. Mara, you'd previously asked what's your enemy's true position and also what might be a useful opportunity. You know, I'd already answered some of this, and maybe this is an opportunity that's already come to pass. It'll be the next thing that I will give you. I think you can see, though, or maybe you have your scanner out also and are kind of augmenting what Arno is seeing through his scope. And you can tell that there are several people concentrated in the dormitory and a few people on the inside of the laboratories and the administration building. There are some other faint readings throughout the structure, but I think that you can tell that those are the main concentration of people who are actively seemingly working or doing things here. And I think it's odd to you that the production facility in the middle seems to not presently be occupied, or at least not heavily so. And Arno, I think you're seeing maybe there's two sentries patrolling, and I think you can see on the map there are some, I don't know if this came through in the scan, this was kind of hand-drawn by me with pencil, but there's a couple paths that are connecting some of these structures, and you can see along those paths there are at least two visible sentries. One right now is near the administration building, walking away from you toward the landing pads, and another one is sort of to the south side of the facility, the bottom of the map, walking from the sort of southern exit of the production facility to the right or to the east toward the dormitory. This like presence, though, you can tell based on there are several kind of guard posts or sentry posts throughout this facility. And that degree of presence, right, that number of guards seems dramatically less than what you would expect to see just given that infrastructure and also just given to protect a facility of this importance. The one other thing that catches your eye, though, and you know, I think you see this through your visor, Arno, and Mara, actually, you're detecting a heat signature that corresponds with this, is on the far side of the facility, there is another much larger crater, a much deeper crater than the one that contained the mine. And there is a thin trail of black smoke that is rising up from that. And Mara, you're detecting a heat signature from that same place, and maybe not a massive blaze, but something that indicates there is a substantial, and maybe I'll even say fuel fire previously. And along the edge of that crater, you actually see there is a substantial presence both of personnel, and they're actually personnel moving in and out of the crater, along with several vehicles, one of which is actually a kind of armored vehicle, but others appear to be more, I guess, I don't know if civilian is the right word, but I guess civil in function, either for transportation or maybe even for emergency use. And you see these at the edge of the crater.
And that's the edge of the crater as in the, like, northeast of us?
Exactly. It's like the top right corner of the map.
Okay, makes sense.
And based on our existing intel right here, I mean, we want to get to production. Do we want, was there anywhere else that we needed to go as well?
Yeah. So I think from the documents you got from Scion, the main targets, the main places you want to make sure that these devices are eliminated would be the bunkers, right, which is where they're kind of being staged before deployment on the ships at the landing pads, the laboratories, and then finally the main production facility. And I think you probably know that that central point, right, that might be the most risky, just in the sense that, you know, maybe the best place to plant one of the counter weapons is in the sort of middle of that complex, right, or sort of more on the central point of that structure.
Yeah, so as I'm understanding it, there's, you know, just we're spread across the map. We've got to hit like all three major sections of the map from east to west over here. The furthest east go into the laboratories, the production facility, and the bunkers. And then as far as we can tell right now with the sentries and with like the other activity going on, the place that we are most likely to get caught is probably the laboratories, just based on the fact that like somebody might be lingering near the dorms. We would be closest to that crater and could get spotted fairly easily. And the sentry is walking in that general direction, whereas you might be able to go behind them for the one that's like walking towards the administration building and sneak into production, maybe, or get to the bunkers, which I think is probably the easiest of the targets in terms of just like getting in and out, but might have like the most work that needs to get done. So go for it.
Oh, no, I interrupted you. I just said I want to go on the roof.
Mm. But which roof?
I mean, can I get from place to place using the roof?
So is this an open air compound, John, or is there like a structure over all this?
It's open. So I think the production facility, right, those structures are connected. The dormitory and the laboratories, those are not connected to the production facility, right? These are all kind of open paths outside. So you would need a suit and to exit an airlock to move between these structures.
Mm. Yeah.
I think the one thing I'll say about your observation, Arno, is I think that's true that the laboratories and the dormitory are potentially occupied. But I also think that the laboratory structure is small enough that you could plant the device on the outside of that. The production facility, I think it's large enough and sort of deep enough, maybe the inside might be the better bet to ensure the coverage. So I think that that is a sort of added complication for that central location.
Okay, so Lauren, gut check me on this. Does it make more sense for you to come into production or for you to have my back watching production such that like if I'm busy or distracted, you can tell me like someone or something is coming in? Maybe you're like, look out over there. Maybe I give you like remote access to my drone or something to that effect to just like figure out, or just like to let me know that like I need to get a move on like more quickly or something like that, rather than physically coming in with me.
Just remember that the drone can't go outside the buildings. That was the consequence of the fail. So
Right. So I think it's just like, oh, I have an interesting way to get around that. But okay. Okay. So let's split up. I'll go bunker. You go laboratories. We'll meet at production. You'll have my back at production, and then we're going to get the hell out of there just to like play lookout over there and make sure that like our spot isn't blown or that like I need to find an alternative way to get out of there.
Okay.
Bueno.
So that's the plan. what I want to know is, how are the two of you going about this? And what I mean by that is, I think there's going to be some more specifics that I zoom in on as we get further into this sequence. But for now, I just want to get a sense of what is your general approach in terms of navigating through this facility, dealing with the presence of guards or any other security, and just sort of how you're trying to get from wherever you are right now to where you're trying to plant the devices. And then we'll see where the dice takes us on that in terms of what happens next.
I definitely think Mara has her scanner out.
Okay.
You know, I can roll it again for that. Like, I'm not opposed to it. Like, I don't care about burning the scanner if I'm going to run through all three of my scanner holds right now. Then when else am I going to, you know, use them?
Yeah.
But I think she's exceedingly cautious and methodical in her movements.
What about Arno?
So I think where the advantage from Mara is that she can just take like a wide arc from behind where we are and like sort of distance herself from the compound to make her way back to the laboratories. The path that makes the most sense for Arno is actually just to like go from the structure that we're currently at to that slightly smaller structure at the edge of the bunkers. The folks can't see this. It's like the bunkers are arranged in a square. And then on the bottom left corner of that is one standalone structure, it looks like, just south of the bottom left bunker. And then from there, make my way to like the maze of bunkers and get to the middle as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And then from there, it's going to be just a game of watching the sentry that's walking by, walking up to the admin building to try to sneak past them and get into production.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just say this. I described like where the sentry was. And I think they've already, like, even as we're having this conversation, right? I think it's like you're, what's happening right now in the fiction is you're surveying and they're continuing to move, right? So, you know, I don't think they're fixed, but I think that you're kind of getting a sense for like the route that they're traveling or sort of what they're interested in most observing, right? I don't think it's quite a video game where it's like, oh yeah, I just got to wait for them to circle back in the same route, right? But I think it's there's certain areas that they're most concerned about, right? Or that they kind of are gravitating toward, right? Maybe the administration building is like where the break room is, right? So it's like, we don't want to stray too far from that. That seems to be an area of focus. So if you're trying to do it based on, I'm getting the sense that you're trying to just time it is the sense. So that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, Mara, I think that, you know, I gave you the locations or what the general sense was from the previous role that you did in the mine, right? I do think that if you want to roll scope it out again, and if you want to use your scanner, you can get advantage on that. That will, you know, that could give you some, I'd say, like more tactical answers to your questions, and including, I think there's some specifically that would kind of just like give you the dub. And, you know, we'll see if that happens. And maybe there are some other pieces of information I can give you too. Like, you know, I mentioned the smoke or some other things, just if you're trying to understand other pieces of what's going on here. Not saying that you have to, but that is an option. There may be other things to further discover from that scan.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I'll go ahead and roll for that.
Do on the roll. Yeah.
That's a 9, so a mixed success. Okay. You know what? Okay.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right, so on a 9, your perception is a little dull, and so you can only ask one question from the scope it out list.
I think it's like the combo between how could I best end this quickly and what's my best escape route way and way past. I don't think Mara is too distracted by anything else. I think that perhaps earlier she was a little conflicted about all of the information we've had leading up to this mission. And again, like, what's Aventine doing? Why are they doing it? And I think she had a moment where she was really searching for clarity and kind of missed getting that right. And so I think that she's gone into work mode, and that the only thing she really cares about is setting these devices, making sure they go off, eradicating the capability of, you know, building these machines for the time being. And she's kind of compartmentalized everything such that she can execute this mission. So all of that backstory to kind of say, all she cares about is the most efficient way to plant these devices without being seen or interacted with, without alerting anyone and getting the F out of there.
Okay. I'll have more to describe on that in a second. Arno, I think for you, I want you to roll act quick.
Oh boy.
Sure you don't want keep your cool?
I'm pretty sure.
9.
That's pretty good, dude. Yeah.
I'll take a 9.
When you use your instincts or reflexes to avoid danger or navigate through danger toward a goal, you roll plus slick. And then a 7 to 9, you do it, but you have to choose one from the list. You're either off balance or rushed and have disadvantage going forward. You've left something behind, I'll tell you what. Or you're pushed to your limits and you suffer stress.
I hate all of these.
I do believe you're at 4 stress right now.
All of these. I'm not taking the fucking calamity right now. Absolutely not.
That was not me trying to encourage that. I just want to be absolutely clear.
Just so you know, there is a calamity option that's like, you get help. Right?
There is a good calamity.
Why would we get that?
No, you get to pick the calamity.
Yeah. I want to save that. I want to save it. I don't feel like this is the role to like to use the calamity on.
It's going to be later this episode.
Yeah, later this episode, there's a bail me out calamity for sure.
Sure, sure.
We fucked calamity.
We have used the we fucked calamity before. That's on mic.
Yeah.
In canon.
Yeah. I'm going to take... Oh, man, I'm going to regret this later. I know I'm going to regret this later. You've left something behind. The Space Master will tell you what.
Okay.
That's the worst thing you could have picked.
Oh, my God. There was a wrong answer, actually, and you picked it.
Oh.
You should have just had disadvantage going forward.
No, I can't. I can't. There's going to be, like, another thing, and then we have to take the calamity. Come on. I can't make it that easy for John to give me a calamity.
Why didn't you just roll better?
Why do you think I'm conspiring to give you a calamity, Mike? That's not what I'm trying to do here.
You, why did you say it like that, John?
You already jumped on the calamity grenade in like the third episode.
You totally didn't last episode. They're like, oh, that puts you at 4 strength. Huh, I wasn't paying attention to that.
Huh.
Oh, yeah. You knew before I did.
If you just roll better, you wouldn't have that many stress. And then you wouldn't be close to a calamity.
Just remember, my calamities quickly become our calamities.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes after we have our blow up.
And just for my edification, what gear have you said you have so far?
The vac suit. So the vac suit, the drone. I said earlier that's that two. I was bringing a pistol and grenades.
Okay.
And I have 4 gear slots, so I can do.
Yeah,
that.
I mean, I'm not holding you to the other two, but So you described your suit as like the carbon fiber, like the tactical suit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is this like a military issued suit?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So it'd have to like comply with the sort of like requirements for, you know, that you would typically expect to see in something that someone would wear into combat as a member of the fleet, right?
That's right.
Okay. I think we'll come back to what you leave behind later then.
Oh, yay.
First, I want to cover Mara. So, Mara, I think you're trying to get to the... You said you're trying to get to the laboratories, right? And I think you kind of hinted at this before, but like, where's the place where you can both plant the device in peace and also have it be unlikely to be discovered? And I think the answer to that is the roof. I think there's kind of 2 steps to this process, though. The first is moving undetected from where you're currently positioned to the laboratories. And then second is getting it up to the roof where you can spend the time necessary to set up the counterweapon. So I mentioned that one of the sentries was moving from the front of production sort of to the east, if we're calling the top of the map north, and moving toward the intersection where one path kind of continues to the right and leads to the laboratories, and another takes a left turn and heads to the dormitory. I think you see that at that intersection, the sentry takes a turn toward the dormitory. And maybe you almost like prepare yourself to move at this point, but I think you realize that as this person is moving down that walkway, you know, it's not like, behind is safe, right? Again, this is that's video game logic, right? That you can just go behind. In this world, they are looking over their shoulders intermittently. I think their job is to patrol this area as a whole. And I don't, you know, just because they're 15 or 20 feet down this path, that doesn't mean that the whole area behind them is completely unguarded if it's open and it lacks cover. I do think that you can use this chance to start to move from where you're currently positioned toward the structures on the bottom of what's labeled production and sort of begin moving from left to right on the map. I think that what you see, though, as you reach the side of this building, again, on the south side of production, and I think this is a building actually that has no windows, right? This is a solid, I guess, like metal structure. It's almost like a metal with these, like with white reflective paint on it, I think, to kind of resist the sun in this area of limited atmosphere. But you actually see somebody walk out of the dormitory, and they are speaking through some kind of comms device, since, you know, you have these suits in an atmosphere that's too thin to carry speech. But after that conversation, you see the person walk back into the dormitory, and the sentry actually moves at a quicker pace toward the edge of that large crater that's in the kind of northeast edge of the map, this place that seems to have smoke coming out of it and a concentration of personnel and vehicles. I think you use that opportunity to move relatively quickly, but still deliberately, from production to the dormitory. That structure on the south part of the dormitory, that extension, I think that's a doorway or an airlock into the structure, and also a hallway where there are several short windows kind of occupying the center third of the wall on both sides. So you can almost like see through it looking from the edge of production. But also, conversely, someone could see you. So I think you stay low and you reach that side. And I guess my question is, kind of tactically, what are you considering, or how are you trying to move from that side of the dormitory across the entrance of the door, right? I mean, right now it's closed, but theoretically someone could walk down the hallway or move through it to get to the laboratories and sort of try to get up on the roof there.
So the idea is that I'm trying to get on the roof, but I don't see a way to sneak up there without getting in someone's line of sight because there's like windows and stuff.
Well, I think right now you're kind of below the windows, right? And I guess the question is like, kind of like, what are you using to time your movement from the dormitory to the laboratories? You kind of got past the sentry, you know, and again, I mean, you have the scanner and you can be scanning. So I don't want to say that that's not going to be helpful, but there are people inside the dormitory. So just kind of trying to think about what factor you're using to think about, like, do you peek up and look? Do you kind of just, you know, try to use the scanner to see if there's a commotion? What's the move that you're using here?
I think she will take a peek. I think that, you know, maybe like things are moving in her mind. Okay, so there's some sort of fire, or she doesn't necessarily know that the giant billowing smoke is out of the ordinary, but based on the giant billowing smoke and also the interaction that she just saw where like people are conversing and then someone hustles away, she's maybe, and the final piece of knowledge here being that our baker friend is might have helped us cause a distraction or something along those lines. All of that to say, I think she'll take one little peek up to see if there's a larger commotion happening in the dormitory.
And was your one question on the last roll, was that what's your best escape route, way in or way past, or was that how could I best end this quickly?
I think it's how could I best end this quickly.
Okay. So I think you look up, right? And you see, maybe you kind of like poke your head up and then quickly put your head down. But you see that not in that hallway, but just past it, sort of in that main structure in what looks to be a sort of common space or almost living room inside this dormitory, you see that there are three people speaking to each other in what looks like underclothes, or, you know, almost a, I guess, a t-shirt or tight fitting clothes that would be worn under a vac suit. And from what you saw, it looks like those three people just went through some considerable physical exertion. I think the best way you can tell this is that their hair is sort of matted down with sweat, right? It looks like they were sort of perspiring inside the suit and to such a degree that whatever the built-in environmental controls couldn't even keep up with that. But you see the three of them talking and you duck your head back down. I think given that, and given that most of their focus was away from the door, you use that opportunity to sort of swing around and assume that the coast is clear and get to the edge of the laboratories. But I think you see on the outside of that laboratory a set of metal switchback stairs. And this is all outside the structure. So all things you would have to, again, be wearing a vac suit to use or to climb, that leads up to the roof of that building. Arno, I think that you stay low. And again, you're kind of banking on the sentry moving toward the administration building and kind of serving around there. Maybe you actually see that their attention is caught on the crater, on this sort of place where the smoke is coming from. And I think you use that to move first toward the kind of smaller out structure, which actually seems to be a sort of environmental control unit designed not, you think, to make the bunkers habitable for people without vac suits on, but rather to keep the bunkers in whatever condition is needed to best preserve their contents, whether that's pressure, temperature, humidity, what have you. And I think from that, you move to the closest row of the bunkers. And what I want to know is, how are you moving through these, and where are you deciding to place the device, and how, what does that look like as you plant it?
Yeah, if we can assume, I'm looking at this diagram, and for the folks who aren't seeing this, again, the bunkers are arranged in a square pattern. It's 5 rows across, 3 rows deep, and I'm probably on the west side of the bottom leftmost bunker. Mm-hmm. I think what I'd like to do is make my way in both one row across and one row deep to that second row in the second column, one further to the right. And where I ultimately want to end up is actually one more bunker to the right of that. So it's like the closest to the centermost bunker. And I want to plant the device on the west side of that bunker so that the bunker itself is like blocking the view from the other structures in the facility. Mm-hmm. I think the only way that you'd really be able to see it is if you're on that empty landing pad to the north of us right now and like looked large inwards right there and just like saw it like that. But that'd be the only way I think that you could see this directly.
And again, I think it's not shown on the map, but one of the smaller landing pads, like the ones to the right of that, is occupied, but that one is, the big one is not. So you're correct about that.
Right, right, right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that this bunker would block the view from those two landing pads as well. So
yeah, I agree. What do we think it looks like as you set and plant the device? You know, Lauren, you described it previously as this kind of almost a spherical device with these like two antennas sticking out from the sides, these two like dishes, like these radiators coming out from the side. But what does it look like as you kind of attach it to the bunker? What is that? Or as you arm it? Like, what do we see?
I think I get on one knee, and I think that I even try to like loosen the gravel around the bunker a little bit to create like a little nook for it, just so that like it's even maybe even a little harder to see. And I want it just to be stable and upright. So you see me there. I just like move some, I don't know, I move some debris. I just like create a little pocket for this thing. I plant it, and then I'm done with the placement.
Mara, so I think at this point you make it up the stairs into the roof. And I think it, if you wanted to kind of take your time and place the device and figure out kind of the best location, I think you can do that. I think you can also see into the crater now that you're a little bit more elevated. And I think it's, again, there could be more information you get from this if there was more an investigation to be done. You know, I don't know if if a third scope it out roll is the best move right now. But I think that you can tell just from being up here that there is what looks like some twisted metal objects in the crater. And I think your best guess for what that is a ship crash. And so that is what, at least from your vantage point, appears to have garnered all the attention of the personnel on this facility, is some kind of vessel crash into this crater, you know, possibly to or from the landing pads.
Yeah, I think, again, I think she kind of called it right. So in light of the generous sacrifice, okay. I said that in a way I was like, I don't think this guy kamikaze himself into the crater for us. I don't think that's what he did. But no, he did as a solid distraction. Status. Yeah, I don't think this man has perished in this crater. But he did us a solid. And so I think Mara's just going to try to lay the devices and get the heck out of there.
Yeah. So I think you do that. And maybe we see on the... like, do the devices have a display of some kind? Like, I know that's kind of, you know, a little tropey, but sometimes tropes are fun. Like, is there something that shows they're kind of syncing up with each other? What does that look like?
I don't think the devices themselves have any sort of display. I think they put out some sort of, like, frequency put it broadly, right? And then they can be armed and activated, detonated, whatever you want to call it, using her kind of a slate or like a wrist interface, if you get what I'm trying to say there.
So maybe, okay, I like that. Maybe what we see, though, you know, we had mentioned that the visors of the suits have these kind of heads-up display capabilities, like Arno had the, you know, kind of binocular zooms. Maybe we see on the side, it's like device status, and there's like three circles. And so two of them are kind of in this, it's like they're in a green state with a kind of rotating blue ring on the outside, and it says ready on the two of them. So it seems like they're talking to each other and waiting for the third to sync up and for you to start the timer, whatever is going to determine when it goes off.
Is it fair to say that Mara had to go a little further, and so maybe I planted my device and I'm have the ability to like wait to see that signal come online, that I'm just like staying over there in the bunker before like moving on to the next thing?
Oh, like that way you know what the about how to time it?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think you could do that.
So I wonder if, hey John, I've never pulled this card with you before.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I don't know if you know this. It's my birthday tomorrow.
It is his birthday tomorrow.
So I wonder if I can, for once, just pull this on you as the GM and you totally be okay with it. So I wonder if, as I'm sitting here in the bunkers waiting to for that signal to come through.
We all sing Arno happy birthday.
No. As I'm looking through the gaps in the bunkers to see if there's like a sentry or anyone else that's walking by, if as I look from left forward, right, back to forward, back to left, the spaces between the bunkers start to blend a little bit, and Arno starts to feel like the gaps connect, and he feels like he's in a maze.
Oh shit.